Welcome to the Recruiter Startup Podcast. Today's guest is Vern Howard. He's a venture-backed San Francisco Silicon Valley tech founder. God, that's a mouthful. And today's presenter isn't me. It's Siobhan Kelly. Siobhan heads up our practice in Ireland and has her own podcast called the Glasshouse Podcast. One of the themes that she's focusing on at the moment is diversity hiring. And Vern's team reached out to get on her podcast, which is amazing. And his platform helps encourage diversity hires. So Vern's black, and the Black Lives Matter movement has really shook up San Francisco at the moment. If you listen to any podcasts like I do, I listen to This Week in Startups out there with Jason Calacanis. And on that, he's absolutely focused on getting more black founders funding. And what a great time to get Vern on the podcast to talk about how hard it is coming from his background and to mixing it in the white elitist world of Silicon Valley. So thought you guys might be interested in a bit of a different conversation today. And you can check out Siobhan's other podcasts on The Glasshouse. And give her a nudge on LinkedIn if you've enjoyed it. If you guys want to come on this podcast, just hit me up. I'm going to be recording quite a lot now on the run-up to Christmas. So big shout-out to our sponsors before I go. Audro, Vincere, CloudCall, and Recbound. Running a recruitment business, most important thing is having your tech stack right and your plan right. And these guys and Rexband through Andy Hallett have helped us absolutely make things, I would say, bulletproof at this stage. I'm really happy with our systems, our procedures, our training. And I suppose another person who's helped us out a lot is Louise from Retrained. So we are, since we've done that, we've actually focused on doing a lot of contingent work in London and likely in New York, although I haven't quite got into that as much as I'd like to at the moment. But outside of that, we're mainly just doing retained stuff. So it's added a real new element to our business, and it allows me to put somebody's entire focus on a key account. And Louise has helped us flesh out that proposition, which has been invaluable. So having access to these guys has just been a game changer. So big thanks to all our partners. It's tough times. We're okay. We're still going to be in business next year. And I hope you will be too. And I suspect you will if you're doing the right things. If I can help in any way, and if you want to join our leadership network, we have a house, a seat for everybody in there, from independent recruiters up to people who are running major corporations. And we've loads more that's happening on that. If you want to join that, hit me up on LinkedIn and we will get you involved. All right, have a great day.
I am so excited for our next guest for the Glasshouse podcast, and his name is Vernon Howard. And he is so many things to so many people, but he's right up my street when it comes to diversity and inclusion. And when I heard about what he's doing, I was literally just blown away. He is the co-founder of a startup, but I'm going to let him introduce himself because there's nobody who tells his story better than he does. Hi, Vern.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. And
I'm excited.
Me too. It's gonna be like one of my best ones. I feel it. I definitely feel it.
Oh my God, that is a lot of pressure. Okay, so introduce yourself and tell people what you co-founded.
Right. So essentially who I am, I always try to like give this kind of quick story and we can kind of like break it up. But what Hollow is a online events platform that lets companies today interact with diverse candidates at the collegiate level and pull data sets on these interactions to understand, hey, if I want to attract more women or more underrepresented minorities, how do I figure out what they want from me before they click apply, and how can I double down there to make a like inclusive environment of my company? One thing we just saw was that companies were making an effort to try to impact DEI, but they weren't actually building authentic relationships in these communities. And most of those start with just pure conversation. But you can imagine if it's hard for them to recruit minorities and women and others, it's because they're not in their network, right? So you first have to start with a conversation. So we built the platform out over 3 years now, and we've scaled to work with 1,200 universities and over 88 companies. So it's been an interesting ride. And then me, quickly, from New York, Rochester, New York, graduated at 16. I was really gifted in math, didn't know what I wanted to do. My mom wanted me to go to college super bad, but when you graduate at 16, you think you're like way smarter than your parents, obviously. I don't know when that changes. And then a year later, you know, everything was, I was like, okay, maybe I should go to college because I felt like a loser. And I ended up talking to my dad. He was in Richmond, Virginia, went to college at Virginia Commonwealth University, studied computer information systems with a concentration in mathematics, went to work in sales and trading, talked to JPM, talked to Capital One, ultimately settled on Capital One. I built out Capital One's first mobile banking application. So if you use the app, that native app is one of my first projects out of college. Rotated over to doing something more technical for Capital One, which was being a application security engineer, which is some people just call it a white hat hacker. Did that for a year. I wanted to move to UK and I didn't. And I started trading my bonus randomly. And this guy who ran a derivatives trading floor at Capital One was just like, hey, do you want to work on the trading floor? And I was like, yeah, of course I do. And it's kind of like a weird ride from there to me starting my company.
Wow. The end. Okay, guys, thanks for listening to the podcast. There's so much in there, though, because we had a conversation the last day, and like I know that you like just tell this story so quickly, but let me just bring you back, because I do remember when we spoke the other day when you were designing the app. Okay, so what I suppose it is, it's for companies who can access these like underserved areas. So whether it's women or people from ethnic minorities or whatever it would be. And for those people who don't think that it's still needed, I was blown away by the CEO of Wells Fargo, who said that there just wasn't enough talent within the Black community. So we need to send him this app. So he can access it. So I'm going to give that, no, really, but if that's the CEO of a company like Wells Fargo, I know he walked it back, but he said it. So that means he taught it, and that was policy. Right. And one of the things that stood out when we spoke the last day is that you didn't go to Harvard or any of those, but you had like a great skill set, a great attitude. And the people that you met in, I think, Capital One, they were like, how do we get, and I know you don't want to say this, how do we get another Vern? That's really the genesis of it, I suppose, was like, you were like, how do I link these two worlds?
And it was super funny because even me building out the platform Apollo now, I can actually look at students from different backgrounds and understand who they are. And what I notice off the charts is the students who do go to the maybe lesser known universities like I did, I mean, they have an insane work ethic. And you realize it's because they have to, right? They have to work 10, 15, 20 times harder because, I mean, they're not going to just get walked into the top 5 tech company because they're doing a all hands at their college today, you know, and some schools are just like that. And yeah, I mean, the Find More Burns comment was something I'm like, well, how do I bridge both of these gaps? Because you guys aren't going to visit these schools until you know the ROI of these students, which sounds super transactional, but that's the nature of the business. It's like, how do you show the ROI of going to these different universities to companies and talking to these groups to companies before they even have to spend, you know, a huge budget? Once they know, they'll actually hands down all the time tap into that talent, but it's getting them to that aha moment of like, why weren't we always doing this, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sad that we're still here having this conversation. And to your point, the Wells Fargo CEO, it's always top down. I kind of have this pitch, and it's not even a pitch, it's just real. It's just HR isn't just a recruiting thing anymore. It's your whole company. Everyone in your company is recruiting for you, your software engineers, your executive assistant, anyone in the company is recruiting for you. And if you have one bad egg in that system that feels some sort of way or says a comment like that, you can bet there's others that are kind of behind the scenes. And when the CEO says that, I mean, I can only imagine the culture at the executive level there.
Well, you'd nearly just get your coat, wouldn't you? You'd be like, let me just head on. Like, what's the point? And the thing that got me was the absolute comfort in saying it, you know, that you could say it knowing you're being recorded, you know, and also that people, like, when the CEO of these companies talk, like, you have people around who are writing, you know, notes or listening to what they're saying or quoting them for a newspaper article. And good old Charlie still said it, you know, like he was fairly comfortable. So of course I would think that, and I completely agree on what you say in relation to, like, everybody's recruiting for the company. But I suppose in a positive sense, and one thing that I think is really admirable, and I'd like your thoughts on this, about when you achieve something, or when, like we had discussed about being from working class areas and things, that like you take people with you.
Yep.
And is that something that like, I mean, like, I know it's a driver for you, but can you tell people a little bit about that? Like, the importance, I suppose, of representation, because when people met you or Vern and they're like, we want another Vern, the more people who look like you or think like you are coming from those colleges, that will spur more people to see what's available within these groups.
Yeah, I think it's funny that you can't be what you can't see. It's huge. You know, where I'm from, even the fact that I've been able to raise money, or the investors that I have and can call up and talk to, I mean, that's just unheard of. I mean, it's like, it's such a far cry from, it's funny, when I go home for like holidays and I explain that to like family or friends, it's like I'm talking to like a blank wall, because it's just, it's not reality. And I think that's a problem too, right? And that's one thing that I see as we continue to build up the company, is like, diversity of thought, it starts so early. Like, you can actually teach younger generations of students in like middle school, high school, like, you can do this, and you can be a software engineer at Google, you can build the next app, you can do all these things, but it's for most in these communities, it's not even on their radar, right? They're just like, I just want a job.
Well, that's just because your world is smaller. So I think then that your expectations become more minimal, you know, it's like, so just a job. Or, I mean, I actually was recording something earlier for International Day of the Girl, and I just had a 10-year-old on, and I mean, I'll tell you, it took a turn. We ended up talking about Joan of Arc and everything. So she doesn't think that women should be stopped doing anything, but she has no limitations. Like, anything that she thinks she can do. And it's only then when I spoke to the older girls, who are like 15 or 16, and, you know, they start to see the Instagram and the expectations. Their expectations were smaller, you know, I wonder where you lose that, you know, between the young age and then you hit puberty and then it's gone.
Yeah. Also, I mean, that it's an interesting generation, because I think especially for me, when I was growing up, like, you have this competitive strain where you're looking at what everyone else is doing and you're kind of trying to figure out your own way, but you are only interacting with people in a small radius around you, school, home, you know, wherever you went with your family. Now kids are interacting at scale. The social media has let them see it's, for most people, they think it's expanded their knowledge, but what it has done is just put you in a box. You look and you're like, I can't do that. So like, I'm going to do this. It's like literally a box that you set yourself in, because everything is categorized in social media. It's like a tag, right? You're this, you're that, you're this, you're that, you're this, you're here, you live here, you do this. This is like, and people don't realize it's actually a box. It's limiting. So yeah.
It's also probably not real.
Yeah. It's not real. And that's like why.
It's like when you see photos of, you know, these like loved up couples or whatever it is, it's like nobody takes a picture in the middle of a raging argument, you know, hold that thought as I'm about.
Exactly. And it's just like, yeah, they, of course they posted this picture right here. It's like, wow, they're skydiving off a mountain together holding hands. It's amazing. How do you get this? You don't.
I know, but that's the completely bizarre thing. But in relation, you just said something, and you said, when you were talking about raising money. Mm-hmm. Now, the way you said that, it could be like, oh, I raised $100. Like, tell people, like, raising money means.
Yeah. So we've raised today $2 million in total, which is shy of 1.9, but we can call it two. And in that fundraise, we've raised from some top tier VCs right now. So Garrett Camp, the co-founder of Uber, Upfront Ventures, a major VC here in LA, Canaan Partners, Tribe Capital in Silicon Valley, Jim Shelton, who he essentially helped build out Chan Zuckerberg Fund for Mark Zuckerberg, and he was the Deputy Secretary of Education under Obama. Steve Case, the founder of AOL. So some pretty big, high-flying people. I think that the startling fact for me is I actually just published an article on Black founders raising money, and it's like, right, the numbers are jarring. I mean, less than 1% of Black founders right now raise over $1 million at minimum. So yeah, it's insane for me to say that I've done that, but yeah, I mean, that's my next goalpost, I guess, after Hollow, is to figure out that scene of like, how do I increase the capital that Black and brown and minorities and women and everyone, people can raise money, because that's something that no one knows happens either.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I would never have known that it's like that. Well, one, I hadn't heard of Black founders either, you know? So look, yeah. I mean, like, hopefully people like you, like you are changing it. And even the fact that you're mentioning those names, like, I suppose fundamentally those people were just entrepreneurs at the start anyway, you know? Like, mm-hmm. It was starting with an idea, you know, and it's recognizing that kind of in each other. It's good that, like, why would you not have a seat at the table with an idea like you have?
Right. I think, and I think just also in certain communities, if you're not exposed to that level of like understanding business, which, you know, I didn't at all. I didn't even know raising money was an option. I mean, even if I had a friend or a family member who started a business, whether it was just like something small, like a smaller business, like a laundromat or something, it was like they took out a loan to start that business. They didn't raise capital to like start that business, which is, it's a whole nother structure for doing that, right? A loan is like, you're on the hook for that. The venture capital is like people, it's venture capital, it's a venture. People believe in you and say, hey, I believe in you and I'm gonna invest this money. And, you know, we're gonna all pray for the best that it's gonna work out and push to make this work. It's a totally different structure than a loan. And in certain communities, no one even knows that exists, right?
I didn't know. I mean, like, until I got into, like, I suppose this, like, professional services and things and learning to recruit for these companies. But I think that's where the wealth gap is.
Yeah.
You know, because even coming from a working class family or whatever, it was like some of the people in my family were still renting.
Right.
You know, because they got caught in paying the rent and then trying to raise money for the deposit but not having enough money for the deposit. It's another kind of way. So they were just lining the pockets of the landlords.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, no, I think when my nana died, I think it was after she died, we found out that we had a TV in the back bedroom. I don't know if you guys have this in the States. And she was paying like, say, $3 a week.
Yeah.
For this TV. Now, I'd say she ended up paying about $20,000. It was like, do you know the kind of, that she just didn't have the cash to put down for it initially. So she had been putting away.
Yeah. I mean, and it's to your point, like, that's where the wealth gap is. And once you understand that the wealth gap is, it's a ton of other things, like, but like one of the biggest pieces of it is just like information access. Yeah. You realize, like, in history, any type of, like, and I hate to, like, go on a tangent, but in history, like, any type of, like, I guess, like, captivity thing, like, maybe, like, I don't want to call it something, but, like, slavery or anything else, it's, like, what you actually do to keep certain communities divided is not pass information along. Like, don't read this, don't look at this, don't watch this. So one thing I did before I even started this business is I read 100 books, like, 100 on, like, startups and, like, business and, like, trading and like derivatives and like Ben Graham, which is like he's Warren Buffett's like mentor who taught him everything, like just anything I could get my hands on about financial markets and everything. Also at Capital One, it was super strategic that I wanted to go from like technology side all the way to financial side so I could know every aspect of the business. It was like, that's how I planned it. Because the information access, no one's going to tell you these things. You actually have to be able to, it's like a coded language, right? And I think once you get into the hang of it and you get around, if you can speak the language, you kind of get into more doors and understand more, like more things. So, but it's just level of access and it's knowledge. It's not like, it's not necessarily smarts, right? It's the fact of, do you know how to speak this language to raise money.
But the thing is that sometimes, like, you don't even know, you know, when people say, well, you didn't ask, but it's like, I don't know what questions to ask, you know, so people haven't been exposed to it. So they wouldn't know.
Yeah. I
love the fact that you read 100 books, though. That is going to be so good.
Yeah, so it's funny, right? When I was doing that, I was just starting my company, so I had to like cut down a ton of my expenses. So I didn't want to live in this apartment that I had. And I told my grandmother, I'm like, yeah, I think I'm going to start a company, right? My grandmother's older. She's 80 now. So she's like, okay. I'm like, yeah, so I need to save my money. She's like, okay, you can stay with me until you, you know, figure out what you're doing. Right? She's just like, you're crazy. You have this really amazing job. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm going to quit this job. First, I told her, I'm like, I'm going to quit this job. She's like, what? What do you mean? I was like, I'm going to quit this job. I can't do it anymore. I feel like something else is calling me. So she already thinks I'm insane, right? And I go in my room. She's like, do you want me to bring, it's funny, it's another story about a TV. She's like, do you want me to bring the TV in here so you can hook up like the cable and stuff? I was like, no, I'm not watching TV for the whole time that I'm here. And she's like, what do you mean? I was like, I don't want to watch TV. Every day I would have Amazon, like, you know, Amazon Prime, and they would deliver like two to three books. And some days I would literally sit in there and read all day. Yeah. She'd knock on the door and be like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just reading books. She literally was like, yo, you're going, something's wrong with him. But it was just, for me, I had like such a thirst for this knowledge because I knew there was something that I was missing, right? Because the corporate thing, I'd done it, I'd run it from end to end. I figured out all the loopholes and all the kind of ceilings that were placed in the corporate structure. And I'm like, okay, I don't want to play this game. And there's something more that I can do here. And it was like building this company, but it was like, I knew I needed to figure out how and how to raise money to do it because that's the only way you can scale it. So, yeah. Oh
my God, I feel like that you're going to write a book.
Eventually.
One day.
Everyone keeps
like, telling me. I knew him.
It's a lot of work. That sounds like a lot of work.
You read 100. I think you could write. Yeah, you could definitely write one. You could definitely write one. And I think it's just such a benefit for people to hear it. Like, is there anybody in your family, obviously, because you just come across like so, I always think there's weird connotations with ambitious, and I don't know why. I think that's just something that I'm projecting, if that makes sense. But right. I think it's the curiosity, because ambitious to me means a little bit more cutthroat, whereas like I think the curiosity is more like, well, I want to know how that works. I want to win at that game and then maybe move on to something else. Do you recognize that in yourself?
Yeah, I think for me, it's funny. It's the game. Like people who meet, it's like I love tech, but I love other things too. That was another reason I moved from San Francisco to LA. It was like, you know, especially me and my co-founder, we were like, yeah, we like tech and it's great, but like I like other industries too. But the game and being able to change something and have that impact, win at it and have that impact at scale to inspire others and then go to do something else. I love that, right? It's like the like Michael Jordan's like, I'm going to golf, play basketball, and I'm going to play baseball. And I want all of it, right? And I think, I'm super ambitious in that sense. Not cutthroat, but
yeah. But it's like why, I think it's testing yourself as well, you know, and testing like the limits of the game.
Yeah.
You know,
I like
what's going to happen here when there's a Byrne Howard in it, you know?
I know, right? Like what can
from
I
Rochester. Change?
And I love that. I love going to certain places. I mean, it's so funny. Certain founders are like, sometimes I go into the rooms and I'm like the only minority or the only. And for me, I love that because now I know everyone's going to look like, what's he going to do? I'm like, don't worry. Yeah. So it's fun. It's fun for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, your whole face lights up when you're talking about it. I do have a question though, in relation to where you're at now with it. Is it fully active and companies are using it or?
Yep. So we're actually one of the schools in the States that's really, really big is Howard University. We're actually hosting their entire homecoming career panel on it's next week, actually. So Robinhood will be there, Intuit will be there, and a few other like hidden surprise companies. But yeah, we've hosted over 88 companies to date now. We hosted events last week with Riot Games. So some of the biggest brands are on the platform now. We're super excited to have some of these partners. We posted events with like over 1,000 students showing up. So I think one event was 1,300 students showed up from 315 universities in 5 countries in an hour. So pretty
I love
fast
that you say it. You say it like you're just going to go and get like a, I think in the States you say like a gallon of milk or something. It's like the most normal thing in the world. Those numbers are phenomenal.
It's basically what you said, though. It's funny. I don't know. Each time I hit like a milestone, I wish I could celebrate, but I'm just like, okay, cool. Next. Like, what's next? How can we do more? So,
well, my nanny used to say that you don't take all the credit and you don't take all the blame. So it's like you acknowledge the milestone, but don't get too excited because, you know.
Yep, agreed. I like that.
Yeah, and then if things go wrong, then don't get too hard on yourself. Just solve the problem and don't use it as a stick to beat yourself. I don't even know why I sound like I'm giving you advice. I think you have it all together. Like, you're fine.
No. These are the best times. I always feel like there's no one who you can't learn from, like, no matter who. So I think I'm going to steal that quote. So thanks to your Nana.
She's going to. Yeah, no, she'd love that. It's wasted on me. It's wasted on me. And in relation, like, with your grandmother, did she get the concept? Like, does she understand what you do?
No, not still not now. It's funny, like, I'll send her stuff, like, and she just, it's funny, she's kind of like, she's happy, but she's not surprised, I guess.
Oh, that's
so she
so
always
lovely.
Says, like, when I send her stuff, like, I'll send her, like, the Forbes article, or we just raised money, or these kind of things, and she'll literally say, okay, like, I was like, oh my God, like, we just raised however much, $2 million, and she's like, okay, that's great. So do you need money for anything? You need your phone bill? Or like, and it's like, what? What do you do? She's just like, okay, so you're okay? Like, you want something to eat? I'm like, I'll take you to something to eat. She's a concept. And I think I love that because when I go home, it's just like regular. It's no pressure. It's none of that. And that's about it. But yeah, she tries to understand it. But at the end of the day, she just wants me to be happy in what I'm doing. And like, that's
enough. Well, I suppose if she loves you, irrespective, you know, so whether you're sitting across from the co-founder of Uber, or you're, you know, sitting in her spare room, Amazon Prime,
reading books with no TV, either way, she's fine as long as I'm happy. So
and she's still going to be feeding you.
I know, and that's what I love anyway.
So what's the next steps? What's the plan?
Right. So right now we're growing really fast. We grew 410% in a single day in April. So the service crash was insane. Growing really fast. We're scaling out the team. So I've been like doing a ton of hiring and meeting people. Investors are inbounding us now to see if we're raising or if we're doing anything. So, you know, that's fascinating and interesting. But what I'm really focused on right now is the student experience and what happens next with students who are saying they're not going to go to certain colleges. I see, especially in the US right now, COVID has like shined a light on a ton of issues. So like equality, we have the presidential election coming up, which is interesting.
I was watching Kamala stop.
Yeah.
I saw the fly on Mike Pence's head.
Yeah, the fly was super funny. The interactions were super funny.
Her facial expression,
I know,
was like, I'm speaking.
Yeah. Not to get super political, but it was the fact of like, she's just like, hey, I gave you your time to talk now. Just let me say what I need to say. I have an investor. He always tells me, and I always know this. It's like, for me, I talk a lot. He's like, yeah, the less you say, the smarter you sound. And what we saw last night was like, she's very tactical with what she says and her point and kind of thing. So she doesn't need the 2 minutes or the 15 minutes or whatever that she's giving to talk.
She's so precise.
Right. Versus the other party was kind of like needed extra time to keep going. And it didn't really make sense.
The lion. I'll be political.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lose any investors. I don't have any. I can say what I want. Say what I want. Yeah. I don't know how she didn't swan dive over those plexiglass things. I was like, oh my Lord. She has the patience of a saint.
It was interesting. I imagine other people in other countries, they look at the U.S. right now and I'm just like, what's going on?
Yeah. I actually get a twitch in my eye, you know, whenever, it's just like an automatic, you know, like you're short circuiting. It's just like, I don't know what's going on.
Is this really happening? But yeah, I mean, as far as Hollow, we're doing a ton. We're scaling the team. And I think what's interesting right now is the educational system is taking a turn for the best, I think. originally it was set up on your socioeconomic status. If your parents went to Stanford or Harvard, or your parents had connections at Stanford or Harvard, these schools are the right, basically, information resource, you had a leg up easily. Now we're seeing certain students say, I'm not going to Stanford, even if I can afford it. I'm going to go to community college and I'll still get this job places or start my own company or do other things. So I think it's interesting on what happens with a system such as the educational system here, which relies on admissions and career placement to make their money. So yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with like degrees and credentialing. So yeah, we'll see. Yeah. That's what I'm seeing now.
It is exciting to see it. And do you know what as well? I mean, again, I was thinking this when I was having a look at like what you do. It's the whole, what was that saying? Like, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
And that used to be a big thing. Well, I mean, like, it still is somewhat like in Ireland. I think we're a little bit behind you guys. So hopefully we'll learn some of the lessons of what's happening in the States, especially as Ireland gets more multicultural and diverse. You know, I think we're trying to address it now and to put systems in place. But even I remember when I went for my interview to get into a college course, and it wasn't a big college, but they were like, do you have work experience? And I was like, no. But then when I went to get work experience, they were like, do you have a degree or a diploma? No. So it's like, so I'm actually never going to get in anywhere.
Right.
Whereas now I think it's a little bit, it's changing a little bit, not in every company, but.
It's changing a good amount. And also companies, they have to kind of bend. I think also like it's changing to be in the favor of like students and early talent to be able to just walk into a company. It's funny, what I noticed is like, I would see job postings sometimes and say like, oh, this is not me, or they need this experience or this kind of stuff. And really what you need is somebody to talk to that says like, hey, you have transferable skills here. You might not have a degree, but these skills that are listed, your experience working at the bank before or whatever, that applies here. And I think that would be a good conversational point to have in an interview. You just need a relationship with someone who works there to tell you how to craft your story, because everyone's story is valuable. It's just, how do I craft my story for X company to understand the value there?
That's literally the interview advice that I give people, because like I was an air hostess. Do you know what a bouncer is? You know, like security on a nightclub. I used to do that when I was saving to go away. So I've done like bouncer. I worked in a hotel, you know, like doing cleaning. I was the worst cleaner ever. I used to just kick everything under the bed. But you know, like when you do all those jobs. So I'm a big believer in transferable skills. And like, even for someone who's working in hospitality, you know, like how to, like you're dealing with different people. Your emotional intelligence is through the roof. You look at someone, you know that the tables that want to talk to that don't, you know, the guy that's going to be a weirdo, you know, literally as they're walking towards you, you can like literally make these. So it's getting that across. But yeah, no, I'm a big believer in that. And to look at the person as a whole, like where they are now, because there has to be a learning curve in a job as well.
Yep.
You know, there has to be, okay, I need this basis, but we can train you. And then all of those, you're kind of going to pull out all of these things in them, you know, as well, like that they already naturally have. I spoke to the CEO of Siemens on the podcast the other week, and he said to me, and I'd be interested to get your thoughts on it. He came from very humble beginnings, and he said that he believed that leadership is in your DNA, and it's from, like, say people like you, like with your grandmother, like if you're reared, like, you know, with good, I suppose, morals, you know, and you're trusting and you embrace. And he said that's what got him to be so, well, to the level that he's at, was because he cared for people and he wanted to bring people on the journey. Do you think leadership starts that young?
Yeah, I think it does. It's funny. You only recognize it later on. But even as a kid, for me, I remember like my grandmothers and my mom saying certain stuff like that, that I had like leadership in different ways, but they would say that. So it goes to the point when I'm like celebrating, like, oh, check this out. They're happy for me, but they're not surprised, right? Because you're just like, okay, cool. I already knew that you would do something similar to this, which is interesting. I never thought of it that way, but yeah, I do think it starts younger, because now I see my younger brothers and I see them doing certain things that they probably don't even feel that they can do right now, but I see it, so.
Yeah. And it's funny for me as well, because like I would think, even the way you're talking about your grandmother and things like that, that obviously when you get past the stupid, you know, teenagers at the age that you said where you kind of know everything, I'm not going to go to college,
yeah.
You know, the college of life. And then you just right. like, no, I'm going to go to college. most of the quotes that I have or the learning things, like as you even see here, are from my grandparents or my mom. Like they're these like old school things that when they used to say to me, I used to roll my eyes, like, you know, like yeah. so much, like, oh, slam yeah. a door. Said it again, and now literally it's my mantra.
Yeah, I mean, you realize as you get older that a lot of these lessons, you had a roadmap early on that you just didn't pay attention to, and now you're like, I'm definitely gonna pay attention. It's funny, right? It's like, why didn't I listen to that, right?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, yeah, sometimes
that's
you gotta
when learn things go wrong though.
I know. I think we learn by that. Some people learn quickly when things go wrong. I'm one of those people that I actually remember. Yeah, as great as that story sounds, there are so many little journeys down in valleys there that, you know, that I love to talk about, because that's the interesting part, is like, how do you go down into a valley? I heard someone say this, maybe it was Travis Scott, which randomly, I heard him say this, you need to learn how to manage the valleys because the peaks handle themselves. Like the peaks are...
Yeah.
Amazing, right? He's just like, oh, like I watched his documentary where it was just showing how he kind of like got into his stature now. He was like, yeah, the valleys were the part that I needed to learn how to like manage my emotions and like build myself back up, because the peaks, yeah. you get a grand.
It's managing your mind. Like I said that a little bit as well, that like it's unknown, like when you're going into panic and your thought processes that are feeding it, as opposed to like what we were discussing, that it's the game and it's just solving the problem. Like even with recruitment, because
yeah.
like my mom thinks I sell people, which right. I don't, but right. you know, like I don't get it, you know, and I'm like, okay, it's fine. But like people obviously have free will and their own thought process. So then you could take them all the way through a process and then they decide not to take the job. So it's emotional in the sense that you've worked on it for so long. And then it's like, you can just control the controllables. You know, yeah. I can do my part. I can rock up, do your best like you would do. And then when a problem appears, you solve it, or, you know, yep. it doesn't send you into a tailspin.
I like that. Control the controllables. I'm getting all the quotes from you and my Twitter. Like today on Twitter, I'm going to literally post one of those quotes and everyone's going to be like, that's brilliant.
No, and I am going to.
I'm going to act like it was mine. So
you're gonna, I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you, because it probably isn't mine either. Everybody borrows it from, what is it, from some other wittier source.
Right.
Is there anything else that you would like people to know about what you're doing?
Yeah, I want a ton of people to really like hone in on the fact I'm posting a ton of content now. So not writing a book yet, but I'm posting a ton of content on like how I see the world of like diversity, inclusion evolving. And like this thing I'm like really focused on now is like talent relationships. I think the original word recruiting and like those things make people draw to like a transactional nature. Like,
yeah.
I need to focus on diversity. So I'm going to hire one woman and one person of color. Done. Like silver bullet. And I think we need to like bring this down to like the keep it simple, stupid mantra of like the dumbest version ever, is like slowing it down and saying like, how do I build true relationships in these communities of people that I want to attract, so that I not only organically attract them to come want to work for me, but I keep them. Because I think the other side of diversity and inclusion is like retention. And you can hire one Black person or one woman, but then they can leave in like 2 months because you're not naturally building an inclusive culture. And I think you're right. The Wells Fargo example is amazing there. We probably will see them in the press soon doing something, you know, but they need to kind of figure out how to build those true talent relationships. And I think that's something I'm really focused on. So I'll be doing a ton of content there. So I'll make sure I share some with you.
Do. And I'll make sure to share, everything, but I do agree with what you're saying. Like I see a lot of companies that they put it on their website, you know, and it's like job done.
Yeah. Yo, you're super it's funny, like, right? Your pauses are amazing that they put it on their website. Pause. And that is just so much space for everyone to laugh and think about every company they saw with like diversity. They have like five different people from all different backgrounds, right? It's a great picture.
Oh, listen, like you can see me, I'm Irish Algerian, like I'm beige, you know, and I've worked in companies where I was like, I was the darkest person. there. I cannot be your poster child for diversity. Do you know? It's like, it's just.
They're like, hey,
not a thing.
They're like, can you help us? Same here. Yeah, they're just like, Vern, so maybe we can do something. It's like, no, I don't think that's a good idea at all.
No, because obviously Black people are a monolith, which is.
Yeah, right. They're like, hey, maybe
we could do 17 podcasts. You know that? Next time we should bring a beer.
Okay, we can do that.
I'd say there'd be a lot more swearing. No, but listen, what I will do, and I'm just so honored to have you on. I think that you're phenomenal. Genuinely, I know, like, we're laughing and joking. I think that, like, it's, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. And I think that's exactly what you're doing. And I know that this is going to be like a super, I don't even think it's a project or a business. I think it's actually something that's a lot more, I think it could bring societal changes. I think you definitely need to sit with Charlie in Wells Fargo. For sure. And potentially Pence. But everyone. we will share links to everywhere that you post content.
Yep.
So people can follow you. I will follow you just to check and see if you're robbing any of my phrases.
Awesome. This is awesome. Okay.
No, it was thank you so lovely to have you.
I know. I look forward to connecting soon.
All right. Take care.